Welcome to Zephyr Yoga Inspiration. I offer these podcasts for free, and your support really does make a difference and is appreciated. To make a donation, please click the link in the episode description or visit zephyryoga.com. So welcome to this session. We are doing a deep dive into the niyamas. Now, the niyamas are guidelines and observances in which we can form deeper, more intimate relationships to ourselves. We worked with the first one, saucha, which is to cleanse, to purify, to glow, to shine the outer and inner experience. This then will prepare us to experience the second niyama, which is santosha, to be able to sit quite comfortably and deeply contented within. And in that content, serene space, we open up to more advanced practices. The third niyama is tapas, yogic austerity. Tapas means that heat for positive change. This is said to be the earliest term for austerity of yoga and the endeavors of the practitioners. So tap means to burn, to glow, but it also includes that fire element, agni, that is said to be the most essential element that creates life, that heals, that inspires, and also transforms. Agni is seen to be this sacrificial fire that reintegrates what has been contaminated by being human. As we are really affected by our life experiences, our judgments, our biases, our opinions, our ignorance, that makes us forget what we truly are and limits us to who we think we are. So tapas refers to this inner heat, burning away the kind of superficial desires and, the kleshas, these kind of yearnings and repulsion and egotism and fears and, just all the ignorance, and tapping into the desire that leads us towards a more ecstatic and creative state. So this points the yogi to something more positive. And, tapas usually involves having healthier boundaries with ourselves and others. So that idea of brahmacharya and control of your senses, the sense organs, indriya jaya, through the physical acts of austerity, but also aesthetics in that way in which we form asana, also concentration and meditation. So as the result, yogis are left feeling strong and filled with vitality. So this is the Sanskrit term bala and vira. And it is stated that yogis, as a result of practicing tapas, have this kind of radiantly heavenly glow, this jyotish sense of an aura that is beamingly resplendent. This is tejas. Their light is radiant. Their charismatic charisma or light is just beaming in all directions. So that is said in the text. And, we ask ourselves, really, why are we doing tapas? Well, really to fulfill our Vedic goals of life. This is the Purush Arthas. These are the four desires that we all long for. We all long to know our purpose, to, we wake up in the morning and we have certain responsibilities, duties that we need to get done. And there's a certain purpose to our day, but also in the kind of grand scheme of like, what is our purpose throughout our life? So that is our dharma. And we also desire means and tools to support that purpose, whether it's your daily purpose or whether it's the kind of big scheme of life. We need financial means. We need, yoga mat for me, because one of my purposes is to be a yoga teacher. There are certain things that we need to be able to facilitate us fulfilling our purpose. The next one's kama, which is like Kama Sutra minus the sutra, but it is still talking about pleasure. It's talking about sensuality, sexuality, procreation, family, friends, intimacy in relationships, but also aesthetic beauty. We all desire to look at beautiful things, listen to beautiful music, create art, be in nature. So we all have that desire for more pleasure. And then we also have a desire for moksha, which is spiritual liberation and freedom, that real ultimate sense of trust and faith that over the grand scheme of life, it's going to be okay. So we all desire to just have that faith and trust in our lives and how we're moving forward. So, you know, the definition of yoga being that yoga is skill in action. Action in Sanskrit means karma. Yoga is skill in the karmic action that we are taking with loving awareness, that maitri, that friendliness in which we cultivate. Remember Sutra 133, cultivating non-judgmental awareness, friendliness, joy, and compassion. So yoga is skill in action with loving awareness. And that ultimately starts to open us to create more lasting fulfillment in our life, our deeper purpose, creating more meaning to our dharma. And that deep contentment, santosha within. And then within that, ultimately liberating us from the kind of mundane kind of pains and sufferings. But what this is actually pointing towards in the scripture of the kind of yoga sutras and certain texts is ultimate liberation from rebirth, kaivalya. So we practice yoga asana to attain the ability to remain present to what is arising in the midst of extremes, like this extreme yoga pose. And all of a sudden, there's some thoughts, some emotions, some sensations, and there's some disturbances in the breath and in the mind. Remembering the Yoga Sutra 131, those four symptoms of maybe you're suffering in a pose or whatever you're dealing with. But we start to remain as yogis steady and comfortable and indifferent to whatever is arising. So we create that sthira and sukham in asana. So that steadiness and ease within whatever pose you're doing, this one or this one, you know, you find that steadiness, that structural integrity in which you can comfortably abide in, and then consciously connect to your wakefulness, your awarefulness, that discerning consciousness, so that viveka, to focus your concentration, dharana, which is one of the limbs, and turn your wakefulness to follow your breath awareness. Then start to explore sensation. And then cultivate light. Sutra 134, 135, and 136. So this is that idea that as we practice asana, sthira and sukham, we become more wakeful. That viveka, the eyes of the bird, noticing the outer perimeter of the eyes and what is looking, and then turning our attention to concentrate on breath awareness, sensation, and cultivating light. So that dharana, in that way in which we start to notice the mind noise, our mental emotional afflictions arising, those kleshas, and anything else that tries to pull us out of practice, as we observe and notice our vasanas, our habitual tendencies, or the vrittis, the little roaming tendencies of the mind, we start to detach with love from what is not serving us any longer in our endeavors to fulfill our desires. So this is really pointing us towards the practice of vairagya, which is letting go of sensory observation, letting go of the story, letting go of the commentary, letting go of that which is distracting you, and really turning that attention to said practice. And the point of tapas is to cultivate not only this physical energetic heat, but that mental emotional heat of concentration, showing that we have the self-discipline to practice yoga. And through the heat and fire of the practice in this way, it is meant to create this clarity, this purity, this transparency on the levels of our physical, energetic, and mental states of being, preparing us as the yogi to fulfill our deeper desires in attaining that state of yoga. And so in the Yoga Sutras, it points really the goal of this practice of yoga is to experience nirodha. So kaya nirodha is that physical stillness. Prana Narodaha is that energetic stillness, and Chitta Vritti Narodaha is that mental emotional stillness. And this state of stillness is said to be the path that opens the yogi towards true liberation and freedom. And if you do a deep dive in the Yoga Sutras, this is where it starts to instruct the yogi to go. So it's not just like mastering handstand and then you will be liberated. You know, no amount of you really refining that handstand will actually take away your anxiety, your fear, your problems, your pains, your sufferings, your dramas. You know, this is why gymnasts aren't enlightened. So, you know, it's just like, you know, by objectifying asana, thinking that if I can just make sure that my body can fit this form, then I'll be free. And that's just kind of the ticking of that spiritual materialism. What we are doing, whatever asana you're doing, you know, you can do this practice, even if you can't touch your toes, you can still practice these principles and attain that state of yoga. So that idea that, you know, whatever form you're in, whatever asana you're in, you practice stira and sukham. And as you become wakeful, you notice what is kind of going on. Are you really rajasic today? Are you really tamasic today? Where are you feeling your stuff in your body? What is trying to get your attention? Bring it into your practice, that heat, that fire. And like, okay, I need to burn through. I need to create that saucha, cleaning this stuff out, whether it's physical, whether it's energetic, whether it's mental, emotional, and in that way in which I can feel quite content, santosha within, so I can really bathe in this heat and light that creates this life force that heals me, and that light that shines so I can have greater understanding, be inspired by this light in this consciousness embodied, and have more greater insights into oneself, that I can transform old habits, old reactions, old ways in which I relate to my body, energy, and mind, and my life, so I can actually abide in myself as myself and bask in that enduring calmness, that stillness, that quietude, in which I can open up to that timelessness of now that leads me into deeper states of consciousness, deeper states of being, where I can transcend, but then expand and then embody that transcendence, in which I can just abide wakefully, self-reflecting, and that way in which I can see our true self, our true nature. So, with that all being said, we are going to do some tapas. Not the stuff that you eat, but the fire that we're going to create. So you will start to feel not only just physical heat, energetic heat, but that mental, emotional heat of concentration. And so this practice is designed to actually trigger you. It's almost like sand in a little oyster shell, and it's trying to make that pearl. So we use our practice like that kind of rough sand to rough up against it, to get us to react, to get us to respond in a certain way, and to wake us up to how our judgments, our criticism, our opinions about either the asana, me, and how I'm teaching, or how you're reacting. It all, like, it's all interesting. Everything becomes a teacher. You know, my wrist becomes a teacher. This is my tapas right now. And then so there is this sense that anything and everything is trying to mirror and get you to see your own humanity, and for you to turn with a loving awareness, a friendliness back to yourself, and kind of go, wow, this is what it feels like to struggle. Oh, this is what the mind noise says when you're in the heat of a pose and it's really tough. Wow, that's interesting. And so the yogi detaches with love from whatever arises and creates this indifference as you remain steady and comfortable with whatever you're going through. But please do not push through pain. Pain's there to let your body know you're going to injure yourself. There's necessary suffering and unnecessary suffering. So please, you have to discern. That's that idea of viveka and tapping into that innate wisdom, that buddhi, to get you to make sure that you're taking care of yourself in practice.
If you would like to continue to practice, find out more information about the topics discussed, or to donate to this podcast, please visit zephyryoga.com or follow the link in the episode description. I thank you.